Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your voicemails, your text messages. A lot going on with the Bulls around. Not necessarily the team, but things related to the Bulls going on this week. So if you've got any thoughts, maybe on the Derrick Rose book coming out or the Rodman documentary coming out tonight on ESPN, anything in between, drop it for us at 331-979-1369. Our episode today is sponsored by Indochino. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com. Enter the code LOCKEDON at checkout to get that offer. It's $369, any premium Indochino suit. It's Indochino.com. Matt, what's going on? How are you? I know this week is kind of an exciting week for you. I figured the Dennis Rodman 30 for 30 coming out has you all jacked up. Am I right?
Oh, what's up, Jordan? Miss chat with you, man. It's been a while. Yeah, I'm just sitting here watching the clock as we record this on late Tuesday morning, getting ready for that 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Central air on ESPN, the For Better or Worse Rodman documentary. I mean, you know that as a Bulls fan, Rodman is one of my favorites all time, and even just as an NBA fan, such a fascinating guy, a fascinating life on and off the basketball court. And you know, even just from watching a couple of these teaser trailers, it sounds like we're going to get a lot of truth and a lot of openness from Rodman. And even the interview he did for our pal Sean Hyken, one of the OG hosts of this very podcast for Bleacher Report, It was really nice to hear some of these open and candid responses from Rodman about not only his upbringing and the path that he took to get to the NBA, but also how he was maybe misunderstood in his playing days, and also some of his thoughts on the way that mental health has sort of, you know, come to the forefront of the conversation from NBA players, like whether it be Kevin Love or DeMar DeRozan speaking out recently about how this is an issue that shouldn't be taboo and people shouldn't be afraid to talk about, and how Dennis being Dennis and Dennis, you know, showing some vulnerabilities at times back in his playing days, he was kind of you know, someone who was willing to pave the road for these players who are trying to express to their organizations that they play for and the fan bases and the media that, hey, we're more than just robots who play basketball. We're human beings and we have feelings. And Dennis certainly wore his emotions on his sleeve.
Yeah, and I feel like now we're just getting to a point where people are kind of understanding that, but we're still kind of missing. We're still missing something from fans and athletes and kind of understanding that they're just more than guys out there making millions of dollars playing a game. Thinking about this, like, throughout the 90s, reading Hyken's interview with him, which I thought was really good, opened up to a lot of things I didn't know about Dennis Rodman, like the beginning of his life, and talking about how he wasn't even really interested in basketball, and first he started playing football, and just the story about how he got to college too, and the road that it paved for him for the NBA as well. The one thing that I wanted to ask you, though, is there any Is there anything that you're going to be disappointed if you don't see tonight, whether it's through this documentary or anything that follows after it that Dennis Rodman does, talking about his story coming up? Are you looking for more Bulls and basketball-related stuff, or do you want to know more about his personal life and what was happening there?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously I'm looking forward to just watching a bunch of amazing Rodman highlights from the Bad Boys Pistons and his stint with the Bulls in their second three-peat team, because any day you get to watch Rodman rebounding basketballs and diving over basketball court is a good day. And I'll still just sometimes just go to YouTube and watch Rodman highlights just because he was unbelievable. And even though he gets the credit as a five-time champion and a Hall of Famer, two-time, you know, DPOY, all these accolades, I still think he's largely underappreciated as one of the greatest players of all time. As far as, you know, what I hope I see in this documentary, again, it goes back to some of the things that he was open and candid about in this interview he did with Sean Hyken for Bleacher Report, because that's been the struggle that I have had in following Dennis in the years since his retirement, and all the ways that he still stays in the news as a celebrity, you know, who is no longer, you know, really that involved in the league. Whether it's his weird stuff with North Korea as an unofficial ambassador and his relationship with Kim Jong-un, a, you know, a violent dictator, or his relationship with our current president. We all know how divisive the political climate is in this country right now. And even just stuff about how he has continued to fight and deal with his alcoholism and you know, battling towards sobriety and being in the news because of, you know, DUIs and hit and runs and all these kinds of things that, like, as a basketball fan and also someone who tries to have a decent, you know, moral compass in life, I find it harder and harder to continue rooting for Rodman and appreciating the greatness of Rodman, the basketball player, when some of the things that he has done off the court and post-playing days are really hard for me to align with and to respect and appreciate. So I hope that the documentary gets some realness out of Rodman from some of those off-the-court issues that people are still kind of wondering, like, yo, what's Dennis's deal with all this stuff?
Yeah, I think for a lot of the younger fans, too, that's really the only side that we see of Dennis Rodman, is the side of crazy afterlife weirdo that not a lot of people know, but knew that he was part of that second three-peat. At least that's for a lot of young Chicago fans. I found it interesting the things that he was talking about, too, about Hyken specifically asked him, like, what do you think the reaction would have been with social media back in the 90s? And, like, when you were playing at the height of every story across every major news publication when it comes to sports, he was the highlight almost on a daily basis. He said he would have embraced it and he would have been a billionaire, too, which I don't doubt for an absolute second. Dude would have had every sponsorship in the world for Instagram videos. Look at what he's doing on Twitter right now. And he's been out of basketball for, what, 20 years or so? It's crazy to me. But the social media aspect to it, how do you think that would have been? Like, do you think he, what kind of player would you relate to him today? Is there a player that we could relate to him today that the kind of social media impact that they're having? I'm trying to think of somebody. Like,
I mean,
most recently, just like Antonio Brown's acts kind of makes sense.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Just kind of that, like, you know, the drama around a professional athlete who has celebrity and certainly has some interesting character traits. But to me, it's like recent examples of NBA players getting maybe a little bit in trouble because something goes viral that they don't mean to go viral, like Tristan Thompson caught cheating on his, you know, whatever, whichever Kardashian he was dating. I don't keep track of that shit, but, you know, like some viral video of him, like, at a club, like, making out with somebody and caught cheating. Or then, like, the Lakers drama that unfolded a couple years ago with, remember, like, D'Angelo Russell and Swaggy P, and like the, oh, there was like a, you know, a confession that was caught on a video that went viral and all that kind of stuff. Like, those kinds of incidents would happen with Rodman every day, right? Like, the fact that viral Twitter videos didn't exist when Rodman was a part of the Bulls second three-peat team is a blessing, because even without that, it was a circus. And you even get, you know, even for some of our younger listeners and younger NBA fans who weren't, you know, around to remember that, it was insane. Those Bulls teams of the late 90s were like the Beatles of the USA. And everywhere they went, there were crowds. And Dennis was always off getting into some kind of mischief. And even like the teaser trailer for the Bulls, you know, the Last Dance 30 for 30 that drops in 2020, there's, you know, one little clip where MJ says, and just like that, boom, Dennis would be gone and we wouldn't see him or hear from him for 48 hours. And it's like, well, Rodman was off partying in Vegas while the team was trying to get ready to play Utah in the finals. So, like, you know, could you imagine Dennis Rodman being caught on some viral video where he's like partying up at some strip club in Vegas or something, and the Bulls have a finals game in like 12 hours. That's the kind of shit that, like, I kind of wish sometimes we would have gotten to experience of what the social media reaction to it would have been, because it was crazy even without the social media world that we live in now.
I mean, imagine that, him going and partying hours before a Bulls playoff game. Like, that is ridiculous. Like, think about that now, like what the story headlines would be now. We're talking about, today's headline was talking about Odell Beckham Jr.'s wearing a watch on the sideline. If some player had decided, I'm going to go party in Vegas before a playoff game, like, that would be the number one story for a month. I found it interesting that he said this too, like when Hyken asked him about the podcasts and owning media companies now, and a lot of players having sort of their own direction in how people perceive their life. He said that he was doing it for 4 years straight. Said would go out, party every night, get up in the morning, go at 6 a.m., go practice, have some lunch, and then do it all over again. To me, that's wild. And also, too, having all the cameras in his house, people being able to watch him 24/7 on the MTV show. A lot of that, he credits himself for being the first player or person to ever do this. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but thinking about it now, like, players do this all the time. Like, TV shows with star athletes. Steph Curry has a TV show. The Ball family has a TV show. Cameras constantly on them, and you have a camera literally in the palm of your hand too. So a lot of these guys take their phone out and are able to record a video easily. But I guess for any major athlete, he might be one of the first of the kind to be able to do something like that. I feel like a lot of people tend to forget it. Did you ever watch the Rodman World Tour on MTV?
Oh yeah. Honestly, like, it was the only thing I ever tuned into MTV for.
What was the show like? That weren't able to watch it.
I mean, it was crazy. It was just a camera crew following around Dennis Rodman while he was at the height of his celebrity. You know, getting into hijinks, going to parties, his relationships with other people in the celebrity world and the Hollywood world. I mean, it was nuts. And it was kind of like, I think, a small glimpse, a window into that life that Dennis was living that he talks about in the interview, of just like he was burning the candle at both ends and in the middle while he was also, you know, grabbing 20 rebounds a night. And it was a crazy life, and a lot of people wanted to see it. The more that Dennis started to express himself, and, you know, I think that was another really interesting part of this interview, and another part that I'm looking forward to watching the doc tonight, is the way that he kind of transformed from the end of the Bad Boys Pistons glory days, where, you know, the team started to fall apart and splinter, you know, a little bit at a time. And then, of course, you know, Chuck Daly, who was a huge father figure for Dennis, who never had a father figure, leaving the team, and he just felt like alone and abandoned, and he didn't know what to do. And then he goes to San Antonio and just starts to, you know, rebel because he doesn't have a family. He doesn't feel welcome. He doesn't feel, you know, accepted. And then all of this crazy stuff starts. The tattoos, the dyed hair, the piercings. And then the, oh, I'm going to go to my book signing dressed up in a wedding dress and I'm marrying myself, or I'm dating Carmen Electra, or I'm dating Madonna, and all this crazy stuff. It was like, well, you always kind of wondered how much of this is a show just to be a show, and how much of this is actually this person that we know as the Worm, a.k.a. Dennis Rodman. And the Rodman World Tour show on MTV, it was like, it was just like all of this craziness thrown at you in the span of, you know, whatever it was, a half hour, hour long show, where you're like, man, I don't know what this dude's deal is, but he is living a very interesting life.
It's kind of sad in ways, because you think about him talking about just his childhood and stuff, and like his mom kicking him out after he flunked out of junior college, and the struggle for just wanting people to accept who he was for who he was. And I think the most interesting thing of the entire piece, and I'm sure we'll get more from the 30 for 30 tonight, was the last question where it said, so what do you ultimately want the Dennis Rodman legacy to be? And it just said, I just want people to love each other. I want people to look at each other with compassion. There are people who can't do things that you can do, but that doesn't mean you can turn your head and spit on them. When they ask for money, they need love too. You can reach out to people and they'll hug you. That's what I want people to remember about me. No matter who you are, what you do, or where you came from, I was a person that cared about everybody, no matter who or what you've done for me. So I thought that was pretty good, and I think that kind of sums up a little bit about who Dennis Rodman really is. I think this whole, the idea of him always constantly wanting attention, even to today, like look at him on Twitter and all of that, and still pulling for all of the attention, all the interviews he's doing now. I feel like it's just kind of a lifelong search for acceptance, and I don't know if he's ever going to be completely happy with that, right?
I think, you know, as much as I am always pulling for Dennis and hope that he finds happiness and wins his battle with alcoholism and all these demons that he has to deal with, and still, you know, the other aspect of his life that I wonder if we'll get some more of his. I know at least a couple of his kids are in the documentary as well, and he talked at his Hall of Fame induction speech about wishing he were a better father to his children. And so that's certainly one area where, you know, if people want to, you know, attack his character, then, Rodman has admitted it himself. He's not a good dad. And it's, you know, I think it all goes back to what you were talking about with his childhood and feeling like he has never had a sense of belonging. And feeling just like, and it's like, it's what I got from the interview with Hyken, and it's what I got most often when trying to, you know, peel the onion layers of who Dennis Rodman is, which I think, you know, some of that stuff was just, you know, the flair and the flash for show, because I think Dennis enjoyed that, you know, that those distractions of the vulnerability underneath it. And I think at the, you know, at the crux of it, Dennis Rodman has always been a, you know, a broken-hearted, lonely individual. And when he flourished, it's because he felt like he was part of a family and he belonged somewhere. Whether that was with the Pistons or with the Bulls, he, you know, even when they were letting him do his own thing and express himself in his own ways, when Dennis thrived, it's because he felt loved. And I think that that's what, you know, his final comments in that interview with Sean were like, and were very, you know, on the nose. It's like, Dennis Rodman at the day wants people to love each other and wants to be loved by people. And I think sometimes he goes about that in the wrong way, and that's why he can sometimes get himself in trouble.
Yeah, and I think he can justify as much as he wants, or, you know, continue to give answers, which I think I kind of respect him for that, like talking about the whole relationship he has with Kim Jong-un. Like, I think for that, a lot of people aren't maybe fully going to accept this type of answer or feel like that he's being real at this point. Cause if you think that way, like the way that we were just talking about, and then you have a relationship with a dude who massacres people, like, to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think that's where people kind of find, on top of all the other crazy things that he's done throughout his life, kind of find a gap between understanding who he is and whether or not people want to accept or like him. But it is, it's a crazy story. And I feel like even with this 30 for 30 coming out and some of the interviews he's done, it hasn't fully encapsulated everything that's happened throughout his life. Like, they could legit probably write a 500-600 page biography on him, and I don't even know if that would cover it.
No, it wouldn't, but I guarantee you I'd read it.
Yeah, that's for sure. But interesting. Very excited for that. It's going to be on ESPN tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm very excited for that. Let's switch topics, though. Let's go to another former Bull that is currently playing in the league that has been doing a lot of interviews lately and just dropped a book. That's Derrick Rose. Sam Smith writing the book for him. He's been doing a couple of interviews as well, but D Rose doing a lot of publicity for this book tour and talking a lot about his time, not only growing up, but also his time with the Bulls, and talking about, I think that's been the biggest significant headline, is talking about his time with the Bulls and that one particular year where a lot of Bulls fans thought he didn't want to play, and that was part of the reason why he was sitting out. And I think this is, for Derek, this is a way for him to kind of voice what really happened, or at least his side of the story for the first time. Or I wouldn't say the first time, but this year overall has been the first time, including the documentary that came out in April. Is there anything that you're expecting, that you're hoping to see or read from this book? Anything in particular about that era, like while the Bulls were still with Derrick Rose and having all that conflict?
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting some of Derrick's thoughts that Sam Smith helps him, you know, put on the page in ways that I think I think Derrick opens up in this book more than we've ever really heard from him before. We always known he's been an introvert. We always known that he didn't ever really like talking to the media. We always knew he didn't trust the media to tell his story the right way. And I think, you know, there are countless examples of that in his tenure with the Bulls. And a lot of it was, as you said, involved with whether or not Derrick would play in the years and months following his initial ACL injury. And I think he felt misunderstood and misrepresented a lot. And I, you know, and even as someone who is not like an anti-Rose guy, but was ready to move on from him, and when Bulls fans and people who call themselves Bulls fans but are more Rose stans than they are Bulls fans, you know, I kind of, you know, pick at them and poke them and prod them on Twitter sometimes, because I think that they're stuck living in the past, and that as a Bulls fan, if you are truly a Bulls fan and not just a Rose fan, that is not healthy. To keep living in the past. And you can defend Rose all you want, but it's still not healthy. You got to look, you know, you got to be grounded in the present, and you got to be looking forward. But even still, as someone who feels that way about Derrick Rose in the Rose years, you can remember them fondly, but let's all fucking move on. But, you know, it's about damn time we move on. I am very curious to see just how much he opens up in this book, and even some of the excerpts I've seen already, and also listening to Sam Smith's interview with my guy Kevin Anderson for the Bulls Talk podcast that dropped earlier today. I think we're going to get a lot more about Rose, about his relationship with the organization, certain elements of that relationship that soured, or where Rose felt disrespected or misunderstood, and more about his life leading up to being an NBA number one pick and rookie of the year and all that stuff. And we've already heard some, you know, little clips and bits about his decision as far as where he was going to go play his year at college, the Bulls' decision about whether or not to draft him, and some of the things about him and his brother Reggie and Gar Foreman in the Bulls front office kind of prodding around and trying to get more information about Rose and his brother and his issues, And how Derrick felt about all that stuff, which is something that we haven't really heard much of from Derrick.
That's the thing that I'm most excited for, is to see all of the stories that come out about that Bulls team. Most interested in his relationship with the front office and what he has to say about that at that time. I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of specific names included in it, but I'm curious to see what he has to say about that entire relationship, especially when Reggie Rose was really his voice for everything. I'm interested to know what his voice and his opinion was at that time, and I feel like we're going to get that somewhere throughout this book, as well as to like his path to getting to the NBA. I think is going to be, for a lot of people, inspiring, and that's a lot of the reason why people follow him too, is because coming from where he did and doing the things that he was able to do, being the number one pick and going to a Final Four, doing all of these things at such a young age and having the weight of a lot of other kids who were aspiring to be just like him on his shoulders, I think is interesting. And I think hopefully we get more of that. You know, we got a little bit of it throughout Derrick's documentary, talking about like how he didn't even really want to do a lot of these sponsorships. He didn't want to be the face of stuff, like, and that wasn't because he didn't love people. It was because he just, that wasn't the type of person he was. He was doing it for the money so he could support his family. And I feel like we talked about this too back in April and May. Felt like that got misconstrued as he didn't really care. And I think now I have a different perspective on it than maybe I did before. And him not necessarily not caring, but all the things that were going on in his life and also going on behind the scenes, especially when he was injured. Like, he was still the face of Adidas. He was still the face athlete there. All the pressure to come back. I remember specifically, too, and I know a lot of people do, is the Powerade commercial. Felt like those two in conjunction together added to a lot of the pressure after Derrick Rose's first injury. But all of those stories I'm looking forward to in this autobiography, and I feel like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and the other thing that I hope we get, and I don't know based on, because I've already talked to some people who have read the book already who got pre-release, and there are certain elements that I know are in there, but I don't know yet whether or not, and if so, how in-depth he goes into the whole off-court drama of a couple years ago where he was accused of sexual assault with he and a couple of his friends, and then, he was never criminally charged with anything, but there was the civil trial with that woman who he had some kind of relationship with, and all of the details that came out about that instance and some of the things that Derrick Rose said while he was in that trial process that I think rubbed some people the wrong way. And at least, if they were not ready to convict a guy, who, again, as I said, was not actually criminally charged or something, still felt uneasy or a little queasy about some of Derrick's comments and the whole, like, well, I know I can't define consent and we men and all that kind of stuff. Like, look, that's the stuff where Rose stands who have come at me at any point over the last couple of years since that stuff has come out. For me, just saying, I'm not condemning Rose for being guilty of anything, but all I'm saying is some of that stuff in that trial, the details that came out and some of the things that Rose said really made me think less of him. And that's the stuff where Rose stands are just like they refuse to yield and they refuse to even say that, yeah, there's some culpability here from Derrick and there's some, mistakes that he made and hopefully he can learn from him and all that kind of stuff. But it's like if you say anything bad about that, the Rose stands for the most part will just say he wasn't even criminally charged. How could you like, oh, you're just trying to like drag him through the mud just like the injuries. And it's like, no. Though, like judging Rose for not playing on a hurt knee and questioning some of his comments about being accused of raping someone. You don't lump that together as, well, you're just anti-Rose, you're a hater. So that is another element where I'm curious how much, if at all, he talks about that kind of stuff. Because I would like some more clarity from Derrick on that. And maybe several years removed from that and more mature, and I do think it's clear to see that Derrick is more mature than when he was younger and with the Bulls. Maybe he has an interesting ability to reflect on that stuff in a way that he didn't when he was going through it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is probably the best time, if ever, to be able to talk about that or at least give his side of the story. He's going to be able to write his own story. People can hear him out, and we didn't get a whole lot of that in the documentary back in April. We thought we were going to get
barely mentioned.
Yeah, we thought we were going to get more of it, but maybe we get it throughout this biography. So we'll have to find out. But I'm very interested to read it. Matt and I have already said that we are going to dive into the book and probably do a review at the end of this week or early next week. So for those out there that ordered their copies, make sure to read that. We were just looking it up. It's only about 250 pages long, so it should be a relatively easy and quick read. But very excited to get a lot of those stories, and we'll see them pop up throughout social media throughout the rest of the week, I'm sure. But yeah, a lot of opportunity for Rose to kind of tell his side of the story for once. And I think that's why I feel like that's why we've seen him do a lot of these media tours now, is he wants to get his story out there. And for a long time, he couldn't. He kind of did what Derrick Rose always did, was just not say a whole lot. And it'll be interesting to see what the stories are. But to kind of wrap up the episode, just quickly wanted to touch on the FIBA World Cup, give kind of an update for that. Tomas Satoransky has been making a lot of headlines, at least for this FIBA World Cup, being a part of Czech Republic's two upset wins over the last few days. Have you been able to catch a lot of these games, Matt, if not live? I know they are airing not only on the weekend, but at really, really strange times here in the United States, anywhere between 5:30 and 8:30 in the morning. Have you been able to catch any highlights or watch any of the replays of any of these games? And what do you think about the Thomas Satoransky hype?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched as many of them live as I can. While also not being, like, you know, an insomniac, and then either watched on tape delay or caught the highlights, at least, of most of them after the fact. And, I mean, other than the USA team, you know, fighting their way through with a limited roster and a pretty stunning upset of Serbia getting knocked off earlier this morning, I believe it was, like, Satoransky, as far as the Bulls fans' perspective, is the biggest story. Because he's just turning in all these amazing performances. You know, when they absolutely dominated Brazil in their second most recent game, he was, you know, 20 points, 7 boards, 9 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks in 30 minutes. And then he had another triple-double in their losing effort yesterday or the day before. So he looks really good, and I know, like, dude, FIBA basketball and their rules, it's different from the NBA. It's weird. It's kind of hard to judge when you're looking at international talent and some of the people being NBA players and some of them not being NBA players. But, I mean, just based on the eye test of what Satoransky has done for that Czech Republic team, it continues to confirm my opinion that he should be and will be this Bulls team starting point guard come October.
Yeah, he's averaging 50.2 points per game, shooting 44.6% from the field and 42.9% from three on nearly 4 attempts a game. I'm excited, man. I think I'm not trying to buy in too much to the FIBA tournament, and the basketball is very different. I saw a tweet earlier this morning. It was like, perfectly encapsulated is Luis Scola absolutely dominating in the FIBA tournament while Giannis continues to kind of struggle, shows the vast difference between FIBA and the NBA's gameplay. And I thought that was perfect. And I was like, it's good to see Thomas Satoransky playing really, really well, but also too, got to take it with a grain of salt because it is a different game. But I think you're right. I think now we go into training camp just a few weeks away, and I think more and more I'm probably leaning towards they're going to use Thomas Satoransky as their starting point guard. But we'll see. Like, we haven't seen Chris Dunn play, and that's just because it was an off season. But we haven't seen Chris Dunn play yet, and I'm wondering what the competition level is going to do for him. But I think you're right. If I had to put money on it, probably going to be Satoransky over anybody else. But the FIBA World Cup has been pretty fun to watch, honestly. And I can't believe that the U.S. almost lost to Turkey. I think this has been the U.S.'s least talented team, which is kind of crazy to say because there's still a lot of really good players in this team. Probably the least talented team the U.S. has ever had. Am I fair to say that?
I mean, certainly in as long as I have been alive and following Team USA basketball, seems like one of the least talented, if not least talented, rosters.
So the tournament continues and goes throughout this next weekend, and then we'll get training camp starting up in just a few weeks. So I'm excited, but I think
USA plays tomorrow morning, right? Their next game, Wednesday morning?
Yes, tomorrow morning. I'm excited, though. I think if the Team USA can ultimately pull out some wins here and maybe win this tournament, it'll put a little bit more respect on those guys' names, especially all the people that were bashing them, for all the guys, like all the stars that were dropping out and saying that this team, again, wasn't the least talented out of all of them. If they still end up winning the tournament, though, I think it's going to put a lot more respect on a lot of these younger guys. But the tournament's been fun to watch, man, and not just use the U.S., but watching some of the other countries and seeing some players that you didn't think were going to be a part of this tournament. It's been a lot of fun to watch, though. Anything else? FIBA World Cup, Derrick Rose stuff, Dennis Rodman, anything like that you guys want to drop for us, it's 331-979-1369. Your voicemails, your text messages, drop those for us at any time. Tomorrow we're going to do
eulogies for Antonio Blake.
Yes, real quick. Shout outs to Antonio Blakeney. I kind of mentioned this on Friday's show, man. I was talking about Chandler Hutchinson's injury as well as Zach LaVine's article in The Ringer. But just going through the roster entirely, there's 16 guys on the roster to start. And then adding Chandler Hutchinson's injury, I was like, more than likely, the Bulls are probably going to part ways with Antonio Blakeney now. But that puts the Bulls back at 15 spots. So for anybody thinking that the Bulls are going to sign a wing, the Bulls don't have room right now. Unless they decide to stretch and waive Felicio, they have no room on the roster to sign anybody. And I don't think that the Bulls are going to waive and stretch Felicio's money to sign a reserve wing. But yeah, shouts out to Antonio Blakey. I'm sure he'll get a shot somewhere else at some point this season.
Dude, he could go be a star in China if you wanted to.
Oh, yes.
Just like with a usage percentage above 50. Just give me the ball. Let me get my mid-range jumpers up.
For real. I mean, like, being a dude that was scoring, averaging, like, 35 points in the G League, in China, he would probably score 40 a game. He would be a star. I didn't even think about that. That's a good call.
I mean, I'm sure his buddy Bobby Portis would miss him a lot if he moved all the way to China, but I think he'd be happy for him. You know, I don't know if Blake Kinney's going to get a shot, another NBA roster. You know, a guy who can certainly be a microwave scorer off the bench, but you know, showed no semblance of actually knowing how to play within a system in his tenure with the Bulls. Like, you know, the whole, like, almost finished the season with more shot attempts than passes thing. Like, that's just asinine.
And I'm not trying to end this episode on a bad note, but I was telling our listeners on Friday, Matt, that I'm very concerned about this Chandler Hutchison injury. I think it's not good, so we'll continue to keep people updated on it, but yeah, for right now.
At least we know Denzel's going to be 100% healthy this season, right?
Knock on wood, nothing happens during any workouts. Get him to training camp at least, please. Just get him to all these.
Did you notice that the Bulls Twitter/Instagram account shared a bunch of videos of Denzel, like, you know, working out and scrimmaging at the Advocate Center yesterday? It's like, look, Denzel, he's playing basketball. We'll see if he's still playing basketball come October, but at least for now, he's healthy.
Let's keep him healthy. How about till opening night? How about we keep everybody else healthy till opening night? To opening night.
Otherwise, Otto's playing 48 minutes a night.
I guess so. Jack Harrison will be playing the three again.
Oh, man. You know Jim Boylan's going to love that.
I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Again, hit us up at 331-979-1369 with all your text messages, your voicemails. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. Anywhere you get your podcast, you will be able to find Locked On Bulls. Make sure you're subscribed to get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.